there. This is David Wong, and you're listening to the third episode of my podcast on cryptocurrencies and similar technologies. In the previous episode, we saw how Bitcoin worked from a very, 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 very high level. We saw that it's like some C++ software that you have to run on your computer, that it will download the entire history of the cryptocurrency, and that you get to see all of the accounts by downloading all of that history and recreating, reprocessing all the transactions yourself. We've seen that accounts are actually designated by public keys, and whoever controls the private key associated with that public key can sign transactions and move the money of their account. And we've also seen that it is the miners who get to choose and decide what are going to be the next transactions that will make it into that ledger, that digital ledger. And when I was talking about that ledger, I mentioned the fact that pages are not called pages, but they're called blocks, blocks of transactions. And there's also a chain form between these blocks. So in this episode, I want to talk about that. And I also want to talk about what miners actually do. So Bitcoin is called a permissionless network. Permissionless in the sense that everybody can participate in deciding what the next page of that ledger is. And so I call that process mining. So everybody can be a miner by running some software. We would say that the network was permissioned if you would have to be authorized or something like that. But in Bitcoin, anybody can try and run the software. And as long as they're willing to do the work to mine, they can do it. The problem is that we cannot just allow everyone to decide what the next page of the ledger is going to be, the next block of the blockchain. If you do that, then you have potentially hundreds and thousands and maybe even millions of people like finding creating the next page of the ledger and saying, "Hey guys, this is the page, this is the page." And someone else would be like, "No, take my page. This is the next page of the ledger." And other people would be like, no, me. And so it's sort of impossible. So basically, cryptocurrencies, and here Bitcoin, have this, I believe most of them, but we'll see that in future episodes, have this sort of leader election mechanism. And there is a mechanism to basically figure out who gets to decide what the next page is going to be. In Bitcoin, this process is called proof of work, POW. So proof of work is the kind of thing that you hear about all the time. Basically, only Bitcoin nowadays do it. Bitcoin is one of the rare chain that still does proof of work. But that's how it all started. That was kind of like the way that kind of revolutionized cryptocurrencies or made that possible. And so it's very interesting. So proof of work is basically like playing the lottery. And I really like that analogy, so I'm going to use that. But imagine that every miner is basically constantly playing the lottery and buying tickets of lottery. You can imagine that every second, if you're mining, you're just buying a new ticket to play the lottery. And sometimes you're going to get lucky and you're going to win. And a ticket is going to allow you to basically tell everyone that you won. So you can share that ticket on the network, along with the block that you want to propose. So really, you're like, "Hey guys, I have the next block. Believe me, this is me. Like, I get to decide what's the next block of transactions. And the proof is that I have this winning lottery ticket." So now the next question is, what's a winning lottery ticket, and what does it mean to buy lottery tickets? And before I can explain that, I have to explain what's a hash function. So I will sort of hand wave a lot of the cryptographic concepts, because I don't think I can spend too much time on that in this podcast. You're welcome to look online for more resources to understand what hash functions are, read my book again, Real World Cryptography, which has a chapter. The second chapter is on hash functions. So I'm just going to give some intuitions here, but basically you can imagine a hash function as some sort of blender in which you can put whatever you want, usually strings or like bytes of data, and they can be like 1 byte, or it can be 1,000 bytes. It doesn't matter. Like the length of what you put inside that blender is arbitrary, but the blender always gives you a smoothie, and that smoothie is always of the same size. And in practice, it gives you, usually it gives you 256 bits or a large number. And it also tends to look random, depending on definitions, but that's basically what a hash function is. It's like, if you put the same ingredients twice, it always gives you the same smoothie, but if you put different ingredients, it's always going to give you a different smoothie. And it's very hard to, if I give you a smoothie, it's very hard to figure out what ingredients I use. So hopefully that analogy works. Under the hood, it's just a bunch of algorithms to make sure that they can take as input an arbitrary string and give you a fixed size output that looks random. If you give the same input twice, you get the same output. So hash functions are used all over the place in cryptography, and especially in cryptocurrencies. And so miners, when miners, you know, try to mine, what they do actually is that they create a block, they put a bunch of transactions in that block, the transactions that are pending, that they've received and that they've been storing. By the way, the miners store their transactions in what we call a mempool, memory pool. It doesn't matter why, but the name sticked and everybody's using that name in even in other cryptocurrencies. So, you know, if you send a transaction to the network, it reaches some miner's mempool, it's pending, the miner creates a block, put your transaction there, put other people's transactions there. The miner also put their own address. When I say address, it's a public key, as I talked about in the previous episode. When they put their own address, why do they do that? It's because they get a reward when they mine a block. So that's when Bitcoins get created and it goes to their address. That's called the Coinbase address. And so they create that block, and that block also references the previous blocks of the history of the blockchain. And that's why it's called blockchain, because each block refers to the previous block. And then they hash that block. So you use the hash function or that blender, as I called it. And they try to figure out, they try to hash it so that it gives you a small number. And by that, I mean, if you see the output as a number of bytes or bits, the most left X bits must be zero. Or in other words, the smoothie that you produce must have a specific color or taste or whatever. So that's really, in the details, you just need to randomly create blocks. And by the way, you don't want to randomly create blocks when you're a miner. You just want to put your transactions, you want to put your address, you want to refer to the previous block. You don't want to change that. And remember, you have to change something if you want the hash to be different. Instead, you just change, there's like a nonce, there's like a random value that you can change in the block. You just increment that, or it's a counter, or you just put a random value every time. Then you hash it and you see if the result is somewhat satisfactory according to the rule of the system. If it is, it means you won the lottery, and you can show, you basically show that block to everybody, and people can hash that block and see that indeed the hash of that block starts with enough zeros, and you won, and they will accept that block. The number of zeros that the hash must start with is actually called the difficulty, and that changes depending on how much people are trying to mine and how much computational power is trying to mine at a certain point in time. And this is actually a pretty big problem. There's a lot of computational power that's being put to mine Bitcoins. It's quite the useless a big number of useless computation, because you're just randomly computing hashes that are sort of meaningless. It's not like you're trying to like solve cancer or do something meaningful. And this is a pretty big controversial topic where people are kind of divided on if Bitcoin should really stop using proof of work and move to something that's greener. And I'll talk about alternatives in future episodes. So what's interesting also about hash functions is that the hash they produce will change if you change anything in the input. Like the slightest change in the input will change the output, the hash, or sometimes called the digest. So it means that a blockchain is also interesting, because if you look at the latest block, which includes a hash of the previous block, which also includes a hash of the previous block, and so on, up until the genesis block, It means that if someone one day tries to change any of the block in that chain, it will invalidate all the blocks that come after. And so that also gives you a rule when you're joining a chain for the first time, when you're trying to synchronize to the blockchain or bootstrap yourself. You might see different chains in front of you. And that is because it is possible that sometimes miners find a block at the same time. And by the way, that's called a fork, because we're forking the book, the ledger, into like two different world, where one is using a new page A and another world is using a new page B. And you sort of have to figure out which one you want to follow. If you're synchronizing for the first time, it's easy. You just have to follow the longest chain. So the ledger with the largest, the highest number of pages. In practice, it's more than that. It's actually the ledger with the most amount of work, but you can think of it as the ledger with the most amount of pages. And so it's actually, so that's also what you have to figure out when you're actively synchronizing to the blockchain. You're always trying to download the latest page. And by the way, in Bitcoin, there's a new page being written every 10 minutes. If people mine pages faster than 10 minutes, the difficulty increases, and so people have to do more work and it becomes harder to mine, and so it goes back to 10 minutes. If the time it takes to mine a new page, a new block, is more than 10 minutes, then the difficulty decreases so that it's easier to mine and people can mine faster. So there's this kind of algorithm in everybody's client that they're running, which tries to make Bitcoin work like that. These are rules that are hard-coded in everybody's software. So sometimes you're mining and two miners find like a fork, basically they find a block at the same time and nobody knows on which block they should continue mining on top of. So sometimes it keeps on going and the forks increase. On one side, people continue mining. There's like two blocks, and on the other side, there's like two other blocks. So again, there is a block A, and some guy finds a block B on top of that, but some other guy finds a block B prime. So now there's two competing blocks that reference that block A. And then people do the same. Some guy, some miner, mines something called the C block, which references the B block. But someone else mines the C prime block, which references the B prime block. And so the fork increases. So same rule here. Miners must try to mine on top of the longest chain or the chain with the most amount of work. And so eventually it is said that things will resolve and there will be what we call reorg or reorganization. One of the fork will be dropped and people will give it up and everything will resolve and we'll pick one of these two. And so so that's something interesting also, is that if you're looking at the tip of the chain, if you're looking at the latest blocks, it's possible that you're not looking at the right block and that the block you're looking at is going to get dismissed and reorged into another block because you might be on the wrong fork, the wrong side of a fork. So in practice, it happens. It happens a lot. But usually, if you wait for something like six blocks, you can have high confidence. So when I say that, I mean, you're looking at a block and you see that six other blocks have been constructed on top of your block. You can have high confidence that you're on the correct chain. You're on the correct fork. Otherwise, it wouldn't have gone for so long. Not people would have stopped mining on top of your block. This is called confirmation time. And since in Bitcoin, people use six blocks most of the time, that translates to 1 hour if one block is mined every 10 minutes. So this is pretty slow. In Bitcoin, we say that the finality is probabilistic. Like you're never 100% sure that you're not on the wrong side of a fork. So it's probabilistic, not deterministic. And that finality, meaning when the block is actually, you know, processed and confirmed and like you're sure 100% that there's not going to be a reorg, is pretty slow. That finality is pretty slow. It's an hour. So imagine you're trying to buy bread and you're trying to pay with Bitcoin, and you're at the cashier and you're waiting for an hour for your transaction to be processed. So it's not very realistic. And so Bitcoin had many, many flaws, and Finality being one of the big ones. So one interesting thing is that today, being a miner is actually not easy. There are so many people using specialized hardware and mining rigs and crazy GPUs to mine that you can't really mine with your laptop anymore. There used to be a thing back then where you could mine in your browser. You could also install like these JavaScript code on your website so that your visitors would mine for you. All sorts of crazy things. Today though, there's so much computational power that's being put to the test just to hash and mine these things that you basically have no chance of winning compared to these miners. So something interesting that's been happening in Bitcoin is that a lot of people have pooled their resources together in what are called mining pools, and they're basically distributing the work. So in mining pools, everybody's given a block that they need to hash, and basically you're being given different miners or different participants in that mining pool are being given a different range of that random value that you can tweak in your block. And so I'm given the range from the numbers between 100 and 200. That's a very small range. In practice, it would be much bigger, but I'm sure that nobody else is going to use that range. And so we're not going to do work that's going to overlap. And from times to times, I'm supposed to send the results of my hashes just to show that I'm actually doing the work that I'm being asked to do, and I'm not, you know, doing nothing. And based on the number of hashes that I send, then the mining pool will figure out how much work I'm doing, and will the moment where one of us successfully finds a hash that allows us to mine that block, the reward will be shared, and depending on the work that I put in or that you put in, you'll get compensated accordingly. And so we have this interesting thing in Bitcoin, which is that actually most of the miners today are concentrated in like a very few number of mining pools. And so the whole thing about cryptocurrencies is that the cryptocurrency is a single database that's supposed to be decentralized. Decentralized in a sense that the security is not in the hands of one person, but it's in the hands of many people. And in a permissionless network like Bitcoin, where anybody can participate, you'd think that it's very secure because the security relies on so many people. But in reality, the security really relies on a few miners, which are these few mining pools. So the design today of Bitcoin is quite outdated. I'm still going to talk about Bitcoin in the next episode because there are some things that I haven't mentioned yet, like Bitcoin scripting and other things that I'll talk about next. But I'm going to quickly move on to more modern and state-of-the-art blockchains after that. So anyway, I think I'm getting close to the 20-minute mark that I'm trying not to go over. And so I'm going to stop now. Again, if you have any questions, find me on Twitter. My handle is CryptoDavidW. And I hope you enjoyed, and I'll see you at the next one.